Well, welcome to Sunday's Leftovers. My name is Matt Higginbotham. I'm the pastor at First Baptist Church Rockdale. I'm joined today, as always, by my friend Paul Klein.
Howdy. How are you?
I'm doing real good, Paul. So what we do here is we look at the sermon from last week and some of the stuff that it may have brought up that didn't get expounded on in the sermon, extra stuff that was left on the cutting room floor when you're doing sermon prep. And today, I guess last Sunday, I started our journey through the book of Proverbs. We'll see how long we're in there and how far we get before we may take a breather and do something else for a while. But what did I say on Sunday, Paul?
So you preached about the first portion of Proverbs, talking about wisdom and wisdom being available for somebody who can humbly seek it is one of the key points. Another one would be that the wisdom that we find scripturally and in faith is that it gives prudence to the young or those that are immature, but it also can sharpen those who are mature into deeper knowledge. If you already have wisdom, it can sharpen the knowledge that you already have, and you can dig deeper. And then you describe two types of people. It would be the fools and, well, it'd be the smart or wise people, but I don't remember the exact term that you
those
used
for
it.
Those who fear the Lord.
Yes, and so, and the differences between the two. And fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So a fear as in awe and reverence and knowing of the Lord, not a I'm frightened by you fear of
the Lord.
Although I think that that awesomeness does bring about a little bit of that type of just the awesomeness of God can
bring if you were to consider the greatness of God and you didn't have some sense of, oh my goodness, if I stay cross of him, he can destroy me in less than a blink of an eye.
That, like, that ought to bring you a little fear.
It should bring you some of what it would be natural fear, but the fear of the Lord is this, you know, holy reverence, respect and awe, the idea of you look at God and say, he is of a different type than I am. And so you don't know anything in comparison to him. And so when we approach wisdom specifically, the beginning of wisdom is the recognition that God is all wise, that we are not. And if you can be, if you can acknowledge that, the gap between you and the Lord, well, you're on the path.
Right.
But if you can't acknowledge it and you think, well, God's not, God doesn't know, I know.
You'd be that fool category.
Even if you've read every book in the world, you're still a fool.
Right.
So,
That kind of leads us into today's topic. So we're going to look into the book of Job and on what it means to give wise counsel and some of the qualities that wise counsel would have. And we're going to talk about the young counselor Elihu in the book of Job. But Pastor Matt, could you give us a quick overview of prior to the counsel given in this portion of Job, what is the book of Job and what's the storyline behind it before we get to the wise counsel?
Yeah, so the book of Job follows the story of a guy named Job. He was super blessed by the Lord. He was faithful in the general sense, and God blessed him because of that. So he had sons and daughters and land and wealth, and everything was good in his life. And the Bible recounts that Satan was, you know, presenting his case before the Lord one day and saying, like, look at how wicked the world is and how great I'm doing, I guess, at destroying the world. And God says, yeah, but have you seen Job? Have you seen my servant Job? And Satan's like, well, of course Job's like faithful. Like, you've given him everything. Right. He's never been hurt a day in his life. You've just blessed him and blessed him. Well, of course he's doing great. And God said, okay, well, I'll take some of that protection off and allow you to you know, punish him. Just don't attack his body. And so, like, there's a cataclysmic day where all of Job's kids die, and, you know, there's, like, crops are being burned, everything.
Livestock gone, right?
Livestock stolen, everything is gone in a moment. And he still praises God. And so Satan comes back the next day, and God's like, see Job, he's still doing good. And Satan's like, yeah, well, like skin for skin. Let me attack his body, then you'll see him curse you. And God's like, okay, just don't kill him. And so Job now has, like, boils and, like, sores all over his body. So it's been a bad week for Job, right? You lose all of your family except for your life and your wife's. Now your body is being just absolutely afflicted with painful sores. You know, you're cutting yourself with pottery just trying to, like, bring relief. And three of Job's friends come up to kind of console him in the midst of his great anguish. And I love the way they're presented at the beginning. Because these three guys come in and they sit with Job, and the Bible says for 7 days they didn't say a word. Mm-hmm. They just mourned alongside of him. We need friends like that who would just sit with us in our pain. But at the end of those 7 days, they started to talk and try to figure out why Job's life was going off the rails, and they just kind of went back and forth. And, you know, you think you're so holy, Job, and obviously you're not. And then Job would give a defense.
They were claiming the sin in his life, too, may have been a cause, right?
Yeah, that's the way we understand.
I'm righteous, and I shouldn't be getting this kind
of
thing.
And so you have these a back and forth for the next 25 chapters of Job and these three friends. So friend A will talk, then Job will respond. Friend B will talk, then Job will respond. Friend C will talk, Job will respond. And so it kind of goes back and forth like that until they run out of things to say to Job. And that's where we are now.
Cool. Awesome. And so Elihu is a young counselor, and we're going to be looking in chapter 32 of Job. And
Elihu.
I know. I've heard Elihu or Elihu, so
I just go Elihu, but so I'm almost certain I'm wrong.
Well, don't worry, because I'm going to butcher something here in the next verse. So the first quality I have for wise counsel is that it does not require an age per se, but does require appropriate timing. And we're going to look at Job 32, 4 through 9. But we can actually start in verse 1 because that's kind of where the story begins for Elihu. So these three men quit answering Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. Then Elihu, son of Barachel the Buzite from the family of Ram, became angry. He was angry at Job because he had justified himself rather than God. He was also angry at Job's three friends because they had failed to refute him and yet had condemned him. Now Elihu had waited to speak to Job because they were older than he. But when he saw that the three men could not answer Job, he became angry. So Elihu, son of Barachel the Buzite, replied, "I am young in years, while you are old. Therefore I was timid and afraid to tell you what I know. I thought that age should speak and maturity should teach wisdom. But it is the Spirit in person and breath from the Almighty that gives one understanding. It is not only the one who are wise or elderly who understand how to judge." So, again, appropriate timing, age per se. But I think also when you come into a difficult conversation, it's not wrong if you're going to give advice that you feel timid or unsure of how somebody's going to receive it to say, "I'm not sure how you're going to receive this," right? Because you have that on your heart.
Yeah, if you're in a room full of people who have been around longer than you have, and are typically thought of as wise people, and you're younger, it is a model of discretion to say, "I'm not going to jump in here," mm-hmm. because these guys know, these individuals know more than I do. They've walked with the Lord longer. But if you notice that they haven't, mm-hmm. like if there's a glaring omission, well, then at some point, you know, you need to speak.
And it's not wrong to say, "I understand I'm younger," right? That's kind of setting the tone for the humility portion, which we'll get to a little bit later.
Correct.
So topic number, quality number two is that good wisdom requires listening. You kind of alluded to that earlier. In chapter 32, verses 11 through 13, it says, "Look, I waited for your conclusions and I listened to your insights as you sought for words. I paid close attention to you, yet no one proved Job wrong. Not one of you refuted his arguments. So do not claim we have found wisdom. Let God deal with him, not man." So requires a listening ear. We can cross-reference the James chapter 1, 19, being quick to listen, slow to anger, and slow to speak mm-hmm. Verse as well. So in order for us to give good advice, we have to listen to the situation. Thoughts, notes?
Yeah, so this applies in any area where you're in conversation where there's heightened emotions. So I think about in a marriage where you may be a period of intense marital disagreement is taking.
Those never happen, right?
Not often in my marriage, but occasionally it's been known to happen. And I have a tendency to know what I want to say, and you know, my wife in this situation will be presenting her case of whatever, blah blah blah, right? At least that's what I'm hearing, right?
Yep.
I'm hearing blah blah blah, and I know she says one thing, I latch on to that, she's going to talk for another 3 minutes, but I'm crafting my argument based on the very first sentence she ever spoke, mm-hmm. and I'm passively listening, but I'm not actively listening to hear actively listening to hear the heart of what's going on. And so then I find myself defending poorly my perspective or myself in a situation because I really didn't listen. Yeah. You know, and she's like, well, you're not listening to me. And I'm like, yeah, I am. But, you know, sort of, maybe not kind of perfectly.
Hearing, not listening, right?
Yeah. And I think this is true. It's hard to listen when you're like he's angry. Like, yeah. He's burning with anger. He's like, I've listened to all of this and I'm mad. But as those emotions come, to slow yourself down to say, I'm gonna hear this properly.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't fix the thing. You can't address the issue. You can't give wisdom that's proper for the situation if you're not paying attention to what the proper situation is.
Right, right. And so a good line that I've used and heard and gotten from a marriage counselor is with this active listening, so what I heard you say was, and then repeating back, paraphrasing, so understanding what the person says, maybe not word for word, but so I understand you correctly, this is what I heard you say. And sometimes that can diffuse the emotional situation and help get everybody on the same page, right?
Yeah, I feel like I did marriage counseling once and it was like a communication wheel. So like she says, I'm mad that you don't take out the trash. And my response is, I hear that you're expressing frustration that I am not taking out the garbage at the right time. Is that correct? And then she says, yes. And now I can move on to my defense of like the garbage being taken out or not being taken out or whatever. But at least we've clearly defined this is what we are fighting about.
It sounds so simple, but that...
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I mean, like when you're sitting in a room
with a counselor and he's going through it with you, you're looking at him like, this is the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah.
And you find out like...
No, I'm the dumbest person ever.
Yeah, well, when we argue, when we're mad at somebody or when we're emotional and we argue, you know, your brain is firing in 100 different directions and you're mad about a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's... But if they state one thing, okay, let's deal with this one thing. And maybe we've got to work down into the emotions or the, I feel neglected when you do this or whatever, like the root is, we'll become exposed at some point. But like, I want to make sure I hear you. I understand. So I can respond to this. And so like for Elihu, he's actively hearing, listening. I heard your arguments. I've heard you guys not refute him. God's not getting any justification in this. Right. Job's being justified, not the Lord. This isn't okay. I've listened. I'm ready to respond now.
And so the next response to that is addressing sin and getting to the root of the issue. So wise counsel lovingly but eventually and always addresses sin and gets to the root of the issue with which you're providing the counsel for. And so the issue with Job, we'll find out in chapter 32, 2 through 3. We actually read this already. He was angry at Job because he had justified himself rather than God. He was angry at Job's three friends because they'd failed to refute him. But also in chapter 40 and God's response, we get a little bit of an idea from God's perspective of Job's error. 46 through 9, if you have it.
Yeah, the Lord speaks. The Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind, and he said, dress for action like a man. I will question you and make it known to you. Will you even put me in the wrong? Will you condemn me that you may be in the right? Have you an arm like God, and can you thunder with a voice like his?
Yep. And most of chapter 40 is like that. This is just the easiest chunk, so we don't have to go through reading everything, so we don't have the time to. But I have in here a cross-reference to James chapter 5, 19 through 20. And I believe this is the portion about if somebody turns another away from sin, saves his soul. But let me double-check here.
My brothers, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone brings him back, let him know that whoever brings back a sinner from his wandering will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins.
Right. And I think the New Testament speaks a bunch about rebuking and you're refuting and turning people from sin. So any notes on that?
Yeah, no, I think sometimes we, when we're dealing with areas where wisdom is needing to be applied, we neglect like getting to an actual root issue. And so we talk about the garbage and we don't deal with
the trash.
I feel betrayed by you. Like you said, you would love, honor, cherish me. I feel uncherished by this. I feel like you're breaking your marriage vow when you tell me you're going to take out the trash and you don't. So you're lying to me. Yeah. And so now
it's like, more than just the trash.
Yeah. So then the issue is bigger than that. And so, like when I've had couples in my office going through things, like I'm constantly trying to point out, like, where is the foundational issue? And oftentimes it's there's a sin associated with it. And the person may not be intending to sin against their spouse. Like I don't intend to lie to my spouse typically whenever I fail to do what I say. But I did lie to her when I say I'm going to be home at 4:45 and I get home at 5:15.
Yeah.
Like I didn't intend to lie. I got a call and I got caught up and I couldn't text and whatever, but like
still happened.
It happened and I need to acknowledge like yes, and then I need to work to like be penitent towards that. So it's from the counselor side, from someone giving wisdom, is to look through all of the words, all of the emotions, and to be able to distill down, and this is what I see going on. That's what good counselors, mm-hmm. if you've ever been to a really good counselor, you'll find that they can just break stuff apart, and you're like, huh,
yep.
I wouldn't have broken it apart like that.
Now, and it's worth mentioning that in this instance, God is not wrong. Job is solely wrong. But in a marriage situation, generally speaking, there is an issue or root problem on both sides of...
Yeah, and in any relationship between people are broken.
Yeah.
People break things.
Job's the problem here, but just as a side note, right?
Yeah,
it's on both sides.
We should note that God is not wrong.
Right,
yes.
But we don't always agree that both sides of the argument both can be wrong in some way. So moving on to the next quality of wise counsel. Wise counsel uplifts God by putting us in our own place, humbling us, and turning our attention back to Him. So in Job chapter 33... And it
read that again for me because I zoned out looking.
No, it's okay.
I was looking at Roach.
It uplifts God, but it puts us in our place, humbles us, and turns our attention back to Him.
Gotcha. Okay. Sorry.
Job 33. I have 1-13, which is a pretty extensive portion.
You.
Yeah, I know. But I think I put on the wrong verse. So we're going to go to 34:10-15. My apologies. Therefore, listen to me, you men of understanding. It is impossible for God to do wrong and for the Almighty to act unjustly. He repays a person according to his deeds, and he gives what his conduct deserves. Indeed, it is true that God does not act wickedly, and the Almighty does not pervert justice. Who gave him authority over the earth? Who put him in charge of the entire world? If he put his mind to it and withdrew the spirit and breath he gave, every living thing would perish together, and mankind would return to dust. Mm. So a humbling note about God and our experience. Yeah. And then 12:13 is the chapter 33, so my apologies. But I tell you that you are wrong in this matter, since God is greater than man. Why do you take him to court for not answering anything a person asks? And then it goes on to talk about God speaking to humanity and the people not listening through the next like 10 verses or so. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to kind of what we started out with, like the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom,
sure.
like to recognize that God is all wise, which for our sake is useful because if we're going to apply like God's truths into our lives in a way which demonstrates and exemplifies wisdom, like wisdom is this ability to apply God's knowledge into the life, into mm-hmm. our lives. If we're going to do that, then ultimately we have to submit that God knows better than we do. And so when the word of the Lord says, hey, homosexuality is wrong,
mm-hmm.
it's not a gray area. I know people want to put it up for debate, like, well, you know, does it really say, did God really say? Well, I remember someone said, did God really say back in a garden it was a snake,
uh-huh.
it was Satan himself.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but,
you know, the teaching of the Old Testament is clearly opposed to it. The teaching of the New Testament is clearly opposed to it. The entire counsel of the Bible is against it. And so at some point we just... You may not like it.
Right.
Like it doesn't particularly offend me, but I understand why people would have issues with it. We love people who are mm-hmm. struggling and walking in sin, and we don't like to hear people that we love are in sin. We don't want to think about those things. I'm fully aware of that. But there is no wisdom in saying you know better than what God has already said. Yep. And so to humble yourself and to say, look, Lord, I'm gonna trust that you understand better than I do. Even though I don't like it, is kind of the beginning of wisdom.
But trying to work out logically how God can be wrong, whether you're directly questioning Him or not, why are you questioning God, right?
And that's not to say there's not areas that we can dispute and debate. I had
discerning the will of God is different than questioning.
Yeah, there
in my opinion.
Like our last time we got together, we talked about like the eternal functional submission of the Son or subordination of the Son.
Yes.
go back and watch it if you want. Terribly
brain mush, yeah.
Terribly like convoluted stuff going on in there. And I think people can disagree on that, assuming you're not denying foundational truths of the Trinity, sure. and probably be in good standing with the Lord. Those are areas for dispute. But where God's made something plain, we are putting ourselves in the place of God.
Yeah.
To say, well, Lord, I see it, but I reject it. And now I'm going to come up with a really creative argument to say, like, well, in the New Testament, when it talks about homosexuality, it's actually talking about men who are taking small young boys to make them into their, you know, playthings, mm-hmm. and abusing them and raping these small boys. Well, like, yes, that did happen in Greek and Roman society. And yes, that is an abomination before the Lord. Sure. That's not that isn't what it's teaching specifically. Right. That would be condemned in that. But it's more than that. It's you know, women exchanging their natural relations for those of the same gender, like it says in Romans, and men doing likewise.
And it's very, very clearly written. So when we
make excuses to try to excuse what we want, at some point we have to recognize, like, we don't know more than God.
Yep.
And there's no wisdom in pretending like you do. So be humble about that. Don't make claims against God. Don't claim to know more than the Lord knows.
Right. And so this quality is about placing the person receiving the wise counsel, humbling the person that's receiving the counsel, and making sure that they're in a humble place before the Lord so that they can receive that counsel. The next portion is that when you're providing wise counsel, you too ought to do it humbly and without partiality. Yeah. And so in chapter 32, verses 21 to 22, it says, I will be partial to no one, and I will not give anyone an undeserved title, for I do not know how to give such titles. Otherwise, my Maker would remove me in an instant. And in verses 6 and 7 of chapter 33, I am just like you before God. I was also pinched off from a piece of clay. Fear of me should not terrify you. No pressure from me should weigh you down. So he's talking to Job here and saying, like, I'm a man too, right? And I am in the same humble position that you are. And that, from a person who's received wise counsel, like, that can be very helpful to know.
Yeah, it does diffuse the situation some, because then the person, we're defensive as people receiving stuff. And so we're like, well, you just think you're better than I am, and you just think you know everything, and you got your life all together. You'll hear that thrown at, you know, Christians or pastors generally speaking, like, oh, y'all just think you know everything, and da-da-da-da-da. And if you don't present yourself as someone who's fallen and broken and of the same stuff as they are, well, then that's probably a fair assessment. And so give them the ability to be diffused a little bit, to say, look, I'm not saying I'm better than you. Mm-hmm. You know, but for the grace of God, I'd be exactly where you are, or I have been where you are. I'm not different. Mm-hmm. I just know this is what the Lord says here.
Right.
And we speak truth.
And James chapter 2, the entire, we don't have to go to it, but entire chapter 2 talks about favoritism, if you'd like to reference it. But we're not going to talk the whole chapter.
You don't want to read all of James 2 right now?
You can if you want to. You want to?
I don't know.
Okay. And then the last quality is that it is carefully crafted in love. And Job 33:1-3, Elihu says, but now, Job, pay attention to my speech and listen to my words. I'm going to open my mouth. My tongue will form words on my palate. My words come from my upright heart, and my lips speak with sincerity what they know. I have a cross-reference here to Galatians 6:1. It says, brothers and sisters, if someone is overtaken in any wrongdoing, you who are spiritual, restore such person with a gentle spirit, watching out for yourselves so that you also won't be tempted. Emphasis here is a gentle spirit. This is more about turning someone from sinful behavior and wrongdoing, and you not falling into temptation. But the idea is that it's done so with a gentle spirit and with love. And I'm pretty sure there's lots of portions in the New Testament that talk about how we should interact with everyone with and in love. Notes?
No. I think our speech should be seasoned with love. That should be the tone of the believer.
Right.
We've been loved. We know love. God is love. Right. So, like, as people who have experienced love, we should always approach things with love, not judgment or, you know, hatred. We struggle with that sometimes because you can feel better when you get to throw up on someone.
It just comes to mind. I didn't have it in my notes, but if we're in a situation where we have an opportunity to provide wise counsel to someone else, but we don't know for sure whether we can do it lovingly or non-judgmentally, is it fair to say that we probably shouldn't give the advice at that time until we know that we can give it in a way that's non-judgmental and loving?
Yeah.
Under certain circumstances, I guess.
I think if someone comes to me and asks me for my advice...
I think this is unsolicited advice.
Yeah.
I would think,
unless they're in imminent harm.
Sure.
I think there's wisdom in waiting so that what you have to share can be received from the spirit in which it should be sent. And so the person can receive it in the way.
Unsolicited, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Solicited is a little different, I would think. So.
Yeah. Yeah. But even then.
And I'll get back to you is not a wrong thing.
No, it's not. And also if you're angry. So I'll give an example inside of my house. One of my kids did something and it irrationally made me angry. Like it wasn't biblically wrong. Mm-hmm. Just everything about it like made me seethe.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to move myself out of the situation to kind of like look at myself and be like, this is not that issue, Matt. Like you're an idiot. You're the problem here. Not that individual. And then the next day or two, somewhere real quick after that, they did something and I just snapped at them. Mm-hmm. Like unfair. And so like they went to their room and were hiding out as you will when your dad yells at you. Mm-hmm. And so I go in there and I'm like, so I need to like talk to you about what's happening inside of me that I recognize is like a failure in me.
Mm-hmm.
There's something in me. Like, here's how I feel
mm-hmm.
about this thing that isn't like objectionably wrong or objectively wrong, but it makes me feel like this.
Yeah.
And so I'm working through that. Here's what you did wrong, which made me get to snap at you in a way that wasn't like appropriate. So like, I want you to hear, even as I know that I have this, like, I don't have full control of my emotions like I want to, I want to acknowledge that so you see that I'm a person who's walking in this, but also this thing that you're doing in this relationship, in this area here is not acceptable for these reasons. Here's what I think you're doing here. So I have stuff I need to work through. You have stuff you need to work through. And through that, I'm expressing like, yeah, I may not be fully where I should be in my heart or in my head, but I'm trying to still give wise counsel in the midst of it. And I think that's fine because I could speak clearly about the issue that they had,
mm-hmm.
but also I needed to acknowledge, look, I'm coming at this with some issues that I have. Mm-hmm. Like I've got some, and the way I said it is like, I have an irrational like anger
mm-hmm.
right now,
mm-hmm.
And it's at you. And it comes from a place of like fear and like this is where it is. It's not right.
But it is what it is.
But
sometimes the elephant in the room exists in this. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to parent you in the midst of this without acknowledging like I've got this. But you also have this. And so I need you to hear what you've got to do to fix the things. And so I can speak with kind of genuine wisdom in that area, so they'll maybe be able to hear that I do love them, even if I'm angry at them. And I do love my kids, obviously. I think it's obvious. So, yeah.
So the qualities of wise counsel. And in a nutshell, what would the counsel be that was given to Job? What was his main root problem, and what was the counsel given to him?
Yeah, I mean, for Job, it almost goes into a sense of like arrogant holiness, right? Like he's...
like self-righteous?
And yeah, justified. Justified
inside. Because he's undeserved. Stuff. Yeah.
And God, like ultimately God's like, Job, like the way you've responded in the midst of this is not pointing people to me. It's pointing people to you and how you've been wronged. And so God's like, you're not me. Where were you when I crafted the ocean?
Right.
Where were you when I did this? Like, and so it's God is drawing those that gap between man and
Job comes around.
And Job does. Job responds like, "Hey, I can't respond to you except like I'm gonna listen." Yep. And then God turns around. Job's life ends up blessed. So,
yep,
happily ever after for them.
Yeah. Any other notes on it?
No notes.
Okay.
5 stars.
Okay.
All right. Let me close this with prayer.
Okay.
Lord, I love you. Thank you for Paul and our opportunity to sit here together, work through giving wise counsel. I know there will be times when we're required to give that. Let us give it with your wisdom. There may be times, Lord, where there's people in our lives who are giving us wise counsel. Help us to find ways to humble ourselves to hear it as well. I love you, Lord. I thank you for your grace. Amen. Peace.